Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Let me ask you a question. You like playing football?
With the Packers and Vikings both choking, the football season is back. So why not remember a happier day?
September 28th, 1924, the Packers came here to Duluth, and the Eskimos beat the Packers 6-3.
We'll take you back to when Duluth had his own NFL team, run by a son of Superior. Plus, their roots rock music is a mix of backcountry flair, a little electric swing, and a lot of northern Minnesota. We'll check in with the Christopher David Hansen Band.
Well, I high and low,
all that and the regional news and review after this.
But I can't find that old rusty nail. The creaking of the floorboards on.
News and issues from a superior point of view.
Let me ask you a question. You like playing football?
With the Packers and Vikings both choking, the football season is back. So why not remember a happier day?
September 28th, 1924, the Packers came here to Duluth, and the Eskimos beat the Packers 6-3.
We'll take you back to when Duluth had his own NFL team, run by a son of Superior. Plus, their roots rock music is a mix of backcountry flair, a little electric swing, and a lot of northern Minnesota. We'll check in with the Christopher David Hansen Band.
Well, I looked high and low.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So the NFL season started this week, and if you're a Packers fan, you might be wishing it hadn't. But if you're a Vikings fan, you're also wishing it hadn't. Can we get a replay? Well, that's not likely, but we can take a look back to an NFL franchise right in our area that doesn't force us to divide loyalties between a Wisconsin and Minnesota favorite, certainly for anyone a stone's throw or a pass away of the Twin Ports. And speaking, of course, of the early days of the league, when Duluth itself fielded a major league team in the fledgling NFL, one that was led by a favorite son of Superior, no less. Those were the Duluth Eskimos, and here to share in their history and glory is the man who wrote the book about them, Chuck Frederick, author of Leatherheads of the North. Welcome to Simply Superior, Chuck.
Thanks, Robin. Good to be here.
And for those who haven't read the book, if Chuck's name is familiar, and it better be, he is, of course, the editorial page editor of the Duluth News Tribune, where 1,000 years ago, sometime right after the Duluth Eskimos, right, he and I worked together as the editorial page staff. And tell us the did you know that Duluth actually had an NFL franchise. When was it, and how did it happen?
Yeah, a lot of people probably don't even realize we weren't one of the original teams, but shortly after the league formed, Duluth was one of the original or one of the early franchises, early teams in the National Football League, in the NFL. It started in 1923. They were called the Duluth Kellys, named for the hardware store down on Superior Street in Duluth that provided them uniforms and balls, and that was pretty much it. And they paid some money to the league, and they became charter members. Of course, the league wasn't anywhere near what it is today. It was a pretty fledgling thing, and the game was extremely rough, and not many people were giving it much credibility. The college game was king back then, but it is accurate to say Duluth had an early team in the 1920s, early 1920s. And of course, I don't know if you're going to ask about it or not, but of course, you know, in 1926, Duluth was credited for saving the NFL from financial ruin.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Well, I'm probably getting ahead of myself then a little bit. So I'll wait till you want to talk about it. But yeah.
So the first year was 1921, and you know, one thing that people, if you look at any of the major sports, in the beginning they weren't all the Chicago's and New York's, and actually L.A. didn't get around to having major league sports until quite late. But you had places like Toledo in baseball, mm-hmm. you know. Green Bay today. Green Bay is sort of a memorial, legacy of that period where you had smaller cities but would field a major team, or again, as major as they were at that time.
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of different leagues back then. Every city had a team in a different league, and sometimes even companies had teams. I know here in Duluth and Superior, the shipyards that built the ships for World War One and World War Two, they had their own teams that played in different venues. You know, and because there was no television, there was no radio. I mean, you know, 25 people would show up and stand on the sidelines and pull their car up to the edge of the field and enjoy and watch. And as I said, it was a very rough game back then. People were not just having concussions; they were 10 players a year were being killed back then. Ooh. So I mean, it was difficult. Difficult times, but the Duluth Kellys were 3 years as the Duluth Kellys, and the team was struggling quite a bit, and it ended up being sold for $1, and Ole Hodger kept it going. You mentioned Ole earlier, and I grew up in Superior, and Ole wasn't really an athlete as much as a business person and a promoter and kind of a very slick operator, and he saw opportunity where a lot of people just saw rough play.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was something of an athlete, wasn't he? Wasn't he a basketball player, or at least by superior standards? Yeah.
Mostly just so he could run the team and make some money. Everything was a business opportunity and a way to kind of promote and barnstorm around and try to make some money. So he was definitely more of a businessman and a promoter than anything else.
Again, that wasn't unusual for that time. It's kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters, who, of course, ended up being the barnstorming team forever, but was just kind of a pickup thing around the country.
Yeah, you're scrabbling together an existence any way you can back then.
All right. And so after that first of all, what was their record the first year?
Records back then? The first three seasons they were 9-7 total over the first three seasons. So they were, relatively successful. They didn't play a whole lot of games, but they were relatively successful. They did okay. I think the game, 1924 was the infamous game against the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. Yes,
we're coming up on the anniversary of that. As a matter of fact, September 28th, 1924, and the Packers came here to Duluth and played down at Athletic Park, which is just off of where Wade Stadium is today. There's those softball fields. That's where it was, and the Eskimos beat the Packers 6-3, and it was said that Curly Lambeau was so incensed and so angry that he vowed never to return to Duluth. And of course, the Packers never have returned to Duluth. So we hold the one to nothing lifetime record against the Packers, I guess.
All right. You hear that, Packers fans? You got to come back here and avenge that loss. And 100th year sounds like a great time to do it. So we can start preparing for that. All we have to have is, of course, a team. We are speaking with Chuck Frederick, the editorial page editor of the Duluth News Tribune and author of the book Leatherheads of the North. So wait a minute. You said the record was 9-7 the first 2 years.
That's three years.
Three.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, play a game when you want to, right?
Yeah. I mean, they did a lot of practicing and played whenever they could schedule it. So yeah, but traveling was expensive. And they played against teams from Ashland and the Upper Peninsula, and just mostly area teams.
Mm-hmm. So the other part is in your book, you have on the cover this true story of Ernie Nevers and the Duluth Eskimos. So who was Ernie Nevers?
Well, Ernie Nevers, while Ole was organizing the teams at Superior Central High School and scheduling games to make a little bit of money, Ernie Nevers was a star athlete. He was one of the greatest ever to play at Superior Central. Grew up in Willow River. And then he played basketball, he played football, and he went on to play college football at Stanford University and had quite a decorated, celebrated career. And there was a rival league that was looking poaching players from the NFL in 1925, 1926. And they got Red Grange, and it looked dire for the NFL. And they went after Ernie Nevers, but Ole was able to pay him a visit and drew on his their childhood friendship or their high school friendship, and he landed Ernie Nevers to play for the Duluth team and changed the name of the team to the Duluth Eskimos, featuring Ernie Nevers. And of course, the infamous barnstorming tour of 1926. They went all over the country and they filled stadiums with Ernie Nevers' star power. And of course, that filled the NFL's coffers, and that was when the NFL president told Ole at the league meetings, they said, you know, you single-handedly, you saved the NFL. You know, we're going to die financially, and because of the revenue raised from the barnstorming tour with Ernie Nevers, the NFL kept on going and then slowly gained momentum and gained footing and was able to survive where these other leagues fell away.
Mm-hmm. So not only did Duluth have a team and Superior have both an owner, manager, and a star player, but a team that saved the NFL.
It's the NFL president himself is the one who said it. I just quote the people, you know. So,
well, you're not the only one to quote them. The Ernie Nevers story was dramatized, or maybe we can say loosely dramatized, in the movie Leatherheads, starring George Clooney and Renee Zellweger. From 2008, at the time your book came out. We have a clip here, and let's listen to it.
Let me ask you a question. You like playing football?
I love playing football.
For a special breed of men called leatherheads, the rules were simple.
You hit anybody that comes near him.
There were no rules.
I like him.
But when the game they love was going under...
We're broke now. Our season just started.
Time to pack it up and go home.
Dodge Conley had the plan.
It's your intention to legitimize professional football?
To build it back up.
Carter Rutherford leaves Princeton to play for the Duluth Bulldogs.
What? You ever hear of Carter Rutherford, the Bullet?
War hero, football boy?
They've got a completely different style, Carter. How are you going to adjust to that?
Maybe they'll just kind of adjust to me.
So you're a sports writer?
Why not?
Hey, what's a girl doing in a press box?
Certain jobs are always going to be done like that.
Big strapping man?
Now, two of football's biggest stars will find themselves competing.
The real story is the matchup between the Bullet and teammate Dodge Conley.
Over the one woman.
You're the kind of cocktail that comes on like sugar but gives you a kick in the head.
Who can throw them for a loss.
You think you're the slickest operator in Duluth.
It's too bad we know each other so well, we might have gotten along.
Well, I'll live.
Alone.
A couple of plays we ran at Princeton.
A lot of our plays are pretty strong.
These are a lot like your plays, only a little more effective.
Well, I've got some decisions to make.
In a minute.
Where were you two?
Nowhere.
And that was a clip from the Hollywood movie Leatherheads, starring George Clooney and Renee Zellweger. And that last part was a hint at the requisite love triangle. And the football story is based loosely on the real-life story of the Duluth Eskimos. Or by that time, the Ernie Nevers Eskimos, or the Duluth Eskimos featuring Ernie Nevers. The movie was in 2008, not one of George Clooney and Renee Zellweger's biggest hits, shall we say, but you did get to hang out with them sort of, kind of, a little bit. They came to town.
Yeah, as part of the movie launch, they had a press conference down at the depot. They rode in on a train, on the back of a train, and just as part of the press tour, celebrated the launch of the movie. And I was among the media that was invited to come and ask questions. I got to ask a question. I don't remember what the question was that I asked anymore, but but yeah, it was fun. It was kind of a neat moment for Duluth. You know, I mean, the stars don't get much bigger than George Clooney and Renee Zellweger as well. So, but yeah, and you're absolutely right.
Well, actually, Ira, you're being modest, or somehow you forgot your biggest moment was that George Clooney threw a football to you, and you caught it. And kept it. You still got it?
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now in my office here, yeah. I did keep it. I gave him a copy of the book, mostly so he would hold it up and I could take a picture of him holding it. You know, I can sell a few more copies that way. I don't know if it worked or not, but that was the idea. And
you know what? If I call him up right now, I bet he's going to say, I'm sitting here reading Chuck's book right now.
Right.
How did you know,
yeah.
Right?
So. I have it on my shelf.
All right.
Of course. And then he brought some jerseys and some footballs from the movie set. And yeah, he threw one to me and I kept it, of course. I'm not going to get rid of that.
No, don't do that. We are speaking with Chuck Frederick, the editorial page editor of the Duluth News Tribune and author of Leatherheads of the North. Final note on the movie. How close was it to the real story?
You know, they got a lot of the feel of what things were like back then. You know, the traveling in train from town to town, having only one football available, washing your jersey in a tub and then hanging it out the train window to dry. You know, those little details, those things actually happened. But the story, it's definitely a fictitious story just based on the story of the Eskimos and Ernie Nevers, and also Johnny Blood McNally, who went on to also play for the Packers later. I think Clooney's character was probably more based on Johnny Blood than on Nevers, because Johnny Blood was quite a character in his own right. He would hop the freight trains to try to get the practices, things like that, and so he was pretty wild back in his day. But yeah, they got kind of that feel for the time and the way things were and the way things looked. I think they got that pretty good. But yeah, no, it's a completely different story that they dramatized.
Well, back to the real story and back to Ole again, Ole Hogsbrud. After the Eskimos and after he got the praise or recommendation or the acknowledgement anyway from the president of the NFL for saving the league, the team disbanded. You could tell us about that. And then Ole's hand in the creation of this thing called the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, after the big barnstorming year in 1926, where they did real well financially and they did real well in lots of ways and became very famous, they played another season in 1927 that wasn't nearly as successful. They struggled. Ole struggled quite a bit financially, and he realized and made the hard decision that he would need to sell the team. And so at the league meeting, the league told him he needed to sell the team. It was pretty much agreed. But he certainly didn't want to, and he didn't want to walk away, from it. So finally he asked for one contingency to sell, and that contingency was that if the NFL ever came back to Minnesota with a team, that he would be allowed to be an owner of that team. And so they wrote him a letter quick, made him that promise, and he held on to that letter for 3 decades until the Minnesota Vikings were created. And then he pulled out his letter and said, hey, I need to be part of this. He was working as a businessman in Duluth. He lived in downtown Duluth, selling confectionaries and, and candy and things like that to different drug stores. And he jumped in and he became a 10% owner of the original ownership of the Minnesota Vikings.
Who were an expansion team at the time.
Yeah, right when they expanded. That's right.
All right. And one other note, by the way, of the very different game it was back then, or maybe actually different than what it would be in a few years, was the teams were integrated back then.
Yeah. Duluth had one of the first players of color, Bobby Rube Marshall. He played for University of Minnesota and down in the Twin Cities and came up to Duluth to play. And yeah, they definitely had pretty much anyone who could stay conscious, I guess, and was strong and big and enjoyed playing. Yeah, they certainly welcomed.
All right. Lastly, I guess it's a few years ago now, when the Vikings were building a new stadium, when the dome was to be no more. I'll betray some of my exploits as your colleague on the editorial page of the Duluth News Tribune. I suggested, you could say tongue in cheek, or you could say I wouldn't mind if they actually took it seriously, that they moved the stadium, they built the stadium in Duluth. Didn't happen. But go ahead.
I was just going to say there was some momentum for that. I mean, he was State Senator Roger Reinert. Actually introduced a bill that, of course, didn't go anywhere, but at least there was some talk about it, and that would have been a neat thing.
Yeah. Well, at least they know we're here and waiting. You hear that again, Packers? 100th anniversary coming up in 2024. We've been speaking with Chuck Frederick, the editorial page editor of the Duluth News Tribune and author of the book Leatherheads of the North. Read the book before you see the movie. Thank you for joining us, Chuck.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Game of professional football has come of age.
That means rules.
I mean, never played any game clean.
Let the games begin.
Throw one.
You're the injured party. You get the first punt.
Leatherheads.
Stay away from my right knee.
Watch my left shoulder. Also my right eye.
Coming up, the real Christopher David Hansen and his band.
I'm sustained by the sugar in my veins, the sweetness you coat me in when I'm in pain. And I pray for the graces that I really find, haunted mansions that I left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've taken note of our musical guests on the show, you might call our lineup eclectic. We featured everyone from symphonic and chamber classical artists to budding rock supergroups, hip-hop, and a lot of folk and Americana, as well as those just difficult to classify. Our next guest is one of the latter, with a self-description of his roots music as being a mix of backcountry flair, a little electric swing, and can we say a lot of northern Minnesota? We're joined by Christopher David Hansen of the Christopher David Hansen Band. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thank you so much, Robin. It's good to join you.
So tell me about roots music. I don't think most people are familiar with that term.
I think about roots rock. I think of the music of, like, you know, Tom Petty and things like that. Just music that's based off of older forms of rock and roll, blues, swing, a little bit of jazz, things that have roots in music that go back in our history just a little bit. It's kind of throwback music for us.
Mm-hmm. And is that what you do, or am I trying to pigeonhole you here?
No, that is what we do. Most of the music that we play is throwback stuff. It's very melody-driven, very chord progression-driven songs, very story-driven songs. We take a lot from the folk side of music in that way. Not every song, but most songs have a good story to them as far as lyrically. And then as far as the chording and stuff goes, it's a mixture of swing jazz. There's a lot of Telecaster stuff is where the country flair comes in, a lot of chicken picking and things like that. So I borrow it from all these styles, and it really came from, you know, growing up with parents that listened to completely different styles of music, and a sister as well, that just they all had such varied taste in music that I was listening to everything from Zeppelin to Waylon and Willie and Rod Stewart from my sister and Journey and just all these, you know, mixtures of music. And apparently I was picking up things along the way that I didn't know I was. So those kind of show through.
Sounds like they would have been big fans of our show, right? With our
they would have.
Mix.
They absolutely would have. Yep.
If part of your work has country roots, you didn't quite grow up in the country. You're from Minneapolis, I believe.
Well, yeah. I mean, the from part is really difficult for me because as a Navy brat, I was actually born in Maryland and lived there for a little while. Don't remember much of that, but we lived in Texas until I was past the kindergarten age. So we moved back to Minnesota, I don't know, when I was, you know, six-ish, seven-ish. And this is where my dad and my mom were from, northern Minnesota. But we settled down in the Hamlake Blaine area of the cities, kind of a suburb. Mm-hmm. And I did my school there and went to music school down there at Music Tech, which became McNally Smith, which closed down about a year and a half ago. But yeah, just we always had our land up here in northern Minnesota. So I would always spend the summers up here in the Ely, Babbitt area of the Iron Range. So it was all over.
All right. But I was right when I said a lot of northern Minnesota. That seemed to be your base throughout all those travels.
Yep. Whenever there was free time, this is where we were at. I live in the family house. I'm the third generation here out on Birch Lake, which is right between Ely and Babbitt. And yeah, so my grandpa cleared the land here and built the bottom part of the house. And then in the 2000s, my dad had retired from work down the cities. And him and I came up and built the upper half of the house together, which was really cool. And and then he passed away 6 or 7 years ago, and so now I'm here in the family house. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of roots here.
And making music. We're joined by Christopher Hansen of the Christopher David Hansen Band. And the other members of the band are who and where are they from?
Well, our drummer is Jim Tietela, and he lives in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And then our bass player is Shane Kingsland, and he's out in the Lost 40, which is it's a section of woods west of Grand Rapids, about 45 minutes west of Grand Rapids, that when they were doing all the big logging way back in the day, they missed a chunk of 40 acres, and then it became a protected forest. Hmm. So he lives up there in some really, really tall trees. And yeah, so we're kind of scattered across the Iron Range up here.
Mm-hmm. And I take it the environment is a factor or influence in your music, in your songs?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It sneaks its way into just about every song, and lyrically in some way, shape, or fashion. If not just the feel of the songs, a lot of the stuff has a very old feel to it. And most of the stuff I write, you know, sitting on a chair in front of a window looking at a lake. So, you know, it influences you to play a certain way. There's a calmness to it.
All right. Well, I think we should hear some of that. What do you recommend?
Well, I think we're going to start off with a song called The Cricket and the Nail. This is a little tune. My son came out from California, and his girlfriend came out, and they helped me do the backing vocals on this, and I had my son play the drums for it. And it's kind of, you'll hear the throwback of it right away. It's got an old sound to it, and it's just the story of a cricket and a creaky nail doing a duet together. Kind of a cute little song.
All right. Well, here's The Cricket and the Nail, No Further Explanation Needed,
right,
by the Christopher David Hansen Band.
Well, I looked high and low, checked everywhere, but I can't find that old rusty nail. Creaking of the floorboards on the stool, on my way to get the morning mail. And I suppose there's a bright side to it all. No one sneaking around the porch at night. Ponder as I tap my foot in time, my finger picking rhythms nice and tight. You can hear them singing love songs, all the way down to the park. It's the little things that take up the biggest spaces deep inside your heart. Until I notice something beautiful, tiny little cricket joining in, harmonize the chanting of the cadence to the song as the sunset starts to dim. Sometime magic happens in the strangest of places. I lounge around the stoop and listen hard. The cricket and the nail, the song of patience, singing out across the boulevard. You can hear them singing love songs all the way down to the park. It's the little things that take up the biggest spaces deep inside your heart. You can hear them singing love songs all the way down to the bar. It's the little things that take up the biggest spaces deep inside your heart. It's the little things that take up the biggest spaces deep inside your heart.
Well, that was fun. That was The Cricket and the Nail by the Christopher David Hansen Band. We are speaking with Christopher David Hansen. Is it Christopher David Hansen or Christopher Hansen or just Chris Hansen?
Well, you know, if you're my friend, it's just Chris. I don't make anybody say my whole name, but when we were putting the band together, I didn't want to use my whole name, but as I started to look at who was using Chris Hansen, there was already a Chris Hansen Band, and there were just hundreds of Chris Hansens all over the place. So I went with the full name, and I looked it up, you know, did all the Google searches, and I didn't see that there was anybody using that. So band names are always tough. So yeah, but you can call me Chris. It's fine.
Wait a minute. What's the other Christopher Hansen band? What do they play?
They're really good. Yep. They're really good. They're like a jazz group. But at one point during the process of figuring out, you know, what I was going to call this project when I started it, I had found other Christopher David Hansons on Facebook, and me and another one are friends that we chat often, and he's a guitar player. And he lives over in Maryland where I was born. So some strange things came out of figuring out what to call the band.
You know, I can't go this far without saying I got to know a few Robin Washingtons.
Did you really?
Yep, most of them are female. I got robinwashington.com, if you really want to find me, outside of WPR.org. And so this Robin Washington is a realtor, and she really wanted robinwashington.com. She was not happy that I had that.
Oh, no.
I get her mail, and I do send it to her at robinwashington.net. So I just made a plug for my dear friend, Robin Washington, the realtor in Cincinnati.
Well, again, so, I'm glad you understand.
You know, I might want to call up something from the other Christopher Hansen band here.
Yeah.
So let's see, using the magic of the internet. Actually, it looks like it's the Christopher Hansen Jazz Quartet. Looks like they were doing Equinox, one of my favorites, by John Coltrane. But we are speaking with the Christopher David Hansen in Ely from the Christopher David Hansen Band.
One of the Christopher David Hansen bands.
Well, my favorite. How about that? So,
thank you.
And to keep you our favorite, let's hear another one of your songs.
Okay, so this was, we're going to listen to a song called Anchor of Love. And this was a song that I wrote, and I was helping my friend Shannon Kerfman do some writing, submitting songs for a Kid Rock album. And I had asked her if she wanted to come up and help me do this duet. So we would trade, you know, I would help write songs for that, and she would help me do this duet. So she came up, I had written the song, and then we recorded it together in my home studio here up on Birch Lake. And my neighbor, as chance would have it, is this amazing cello player. So while she was up here helping record, we went next door and we were like, would you like to come over and play cello on this song we're recording? He was like, yes, I would. And so the cello on there is Tom Bainey, and the backing vocals and the harmonies, that's Shannon Kerfman. This is Anchor of Love.
All right, let's hear it.
I'm sustained by the sugar in my veins, the sweetness you coat me in when I'm in pain. And I pray for the graces that I rarely find, haunted mansions that I left behind, where the dead still talk and they reach through the years. Voice in my head, not the one in my ears. They sing to me softly as I wander about, the blood that we share and our shadow of doubt. Maybe stubborn and brazen on the rain. that I pull. I wish I was kinder and more versatile. The strength of my focus cuts right in my heels. It's my turn to steer the ancestral wheel. And I'm still the boy that I was way back when. Knock down the snowman in the Maryland wind. Texas was hot, I remember the flood. So far from the places that I came here from. Maybe
And that was Anchor of Love by the Christopher David Hansen Band with Shannon Kerfman from Kid Rock's band. And we are speaking with Christopher David Hansen. So, well, you've taken us through the forest. You gave us a cricket and a nail. gave us a few more Christopher David Hansons, which we did not expect. What do you want to take us out with?
I'm going to take you out with a song called Right Back to the Start. I'm part of a singer-songwriter challenge group. It's a nationwide thing, and we get prompts each week, and we write songs. And this was one of my prompted songs, and I forget what the word prompt was for this, but all the songs that we listened to today came off of an album that I just released called Simplify. And you can find it all over the place. And
yes, you can find it everywhere, but just in case we can't find out where everywhere is, website or other ways to find your music?
Yeah, you know, I'm like you. I ended up getting ChristopherDavidHanson.com.
Oh, I bet that other Christopher David Hansen is really miffed at you.
Right. So, yeah, you could just go to the website. It's easy to find. All the album videos, all that stuff is there. And I just want to say thanks to you for having me on and being such a gracious host, too.
All right. Well, thank you for being with us. We are honored to have the Christopher David Hansen. And we'll go out with Right Back to the Start. The weekly roundup of regional news is next.
Well, I'm just a worried mess. That's just the shape I'm in. This dark
cloud hugging my shadow and the star within. And the red rocks from the canyon tonight remind me of something you wrote.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, the news in Duluth is not so good news.
Well, we're looking out a couple years. It's not so good news on the financial front for the city. Next year, we're okay. This week, Mayor Emily Larson unveiled her budget plans to the city council. And one notable aspect of that is that health insurance costs for city workers are going to skyrocket starting in 2023. So although those health insurance costs are going to be flat next year for 2022, when the tax levy will increase just slightly, 6%, which is about a $3 increase for the median homeowner, we're going to be seeing big 17% jumps in health insurance costs each year thereafter. That will make a roughly $5 million projected general fund deficit in 2023 and nearly $20 million by 2026. Councilmember Gary Anderson summed it up pretty well, saying, "This is really scary." Mayor Larson said she wants to avoid reducing benefits. They want to avoid raising property taxes to meet this gap. They want to avoid even laying people off. So really the only option then is pushing state government to increase local government aid, which is a major part of most cities' budgets. So that will be the big battle in the next couple of years the city needs to fight in order to keep its staffing levels, keep its property taxes relatively stable, and keep on having more or less boring budget announcements, which for 2022 is what Larson had intended.
Well, that not-so-boring news comes as bad feelings are increasing over the city's hiring of a new downtown social worker. Why is that an issue?
Yes, well, this was introduced last month, this proposal to add a staff member to the Greater Downtown Council at a cost of $300,000 over the next 3 years to essentially help folks connect to services they might need. So during the pandemic, there's been an increase in addiction issues, mental health crises, homelessness, and downtown, the business community especially, says that they're bearing the brunt of that, and folks aren't coming downtown, they're not feeling safe. That said, the Duluth NAACP and several other social groups are saying, hey, we're working on a program. We've got this money set aside from the federal government for a community-wide crisis response pilot program. And some of that money, $2.1 million, was taken to make this new social outreach program that's specifically for downtown. So the vote on Monday was 7-2 to approve this $300,000 program over massive opposition, organized opposition from the NAACP and their supporters. Council members ultimately said, you know, we need to do something now. This is an either or, not an and, said council member Janet Kennedy, a former vice president of the local NAACP. So it's a very tricky issue. At the end of the day, you know, there is going to be a new social outreach worker who works for a nonprofit that represents downtown businesses, but is trained by Block by Block, a company that does this in cities across the nation. And at the same time, there is still $1.8 million going toward this community-wide crisis program that is still being developed.
All right. Well, headed over to Superior. There are flowers blooming on Barker's Island, but maybe not the flowers we want.
Not quite. Flowers you should not touch or let your pets touch, actually. There was an algae bloom reported last week at the Barker's Island Beach. You know, I talked to the Wisconsin DNR about this, and, you know, wind speeds were low. The water surface was like glass, they said. And so due to temperatures, nutrient buildup in the water, it was just perfect enough for the cyanobacteria bloom to be promoted. This week, it's gone. Winds kind of blew it away, but the beach is closed. It's not being monitored, so folks should still stay out of the water. With warm water in Lake Superior this year, earlier than usual, we are seeing more algae blooms than would be typical. In fact, Lake Superior didn't really see any recorded algae blooms until 2012. And in 2021, so far, we've had at least six that have been observed, mostly on the western end of the lake between Apostle Islands and Duluth Superior. It's still fairly warm surface water, so although it's kind of later in the season, that there is still a possibility that blooms are forming. And if you see them, don't touch them. Call the DNR, call someone, take a picture, record it, because these are still being researched. You know, it's much better understood how, why, and where they form in warm, shallow lakes like Erie, but Lake Superior is not supposed to be good habitat for these potentially hazardous blooms.
Well, if people do want to view that algae, and as you say, but don't touch it, Danny, the city has come to a decision about its tourism marketing.
Yeah, Superior City Council members met in a committee of the whole meeting on Tuesday, and they voted 7-3 to create a tourism commission. And in a separate vote, they approved that commission using 70% of the room taxes the city draws in for tourism promotion and development beginning in January next year. And tourism officials and city leaders have been at odds over the creation of this commission because Travel Superior is the current tourism entity that receives 70% of those room taxes. And with the creation of the commission, you know, that body could contract with not just Travel Superior, but other entities to promote the city. And so Travel Superior and several city councilors, including Brent Fennessy and Keith Kern, opposed this move, saying it may negatively impact not just Travel Superior, but the tourism industry as a whole. And they said that the decision was being rushed. But Mayor Jim Payne says tourism commissions are used widely by large cities across the state, and that they've been discussing these changes for months. Councilor Jenny Van Sickle argued that creating this commission will create competition and unlock opportunities for the city. And as you know, this all follows a recent move by Duluth City Council to negotiate a contract with an outside firm for tourism promotion rather than Duluth Tourism Bureau Visit Duluth.
Well, also on the tourism front, a roadway, a scenic byway, has a new name.
Yeah, and this week, tourism officials in Bayfield County are marking the designation of the Wisconsin Lake Superior Scenic Byway as a national scenic byway. The Federal Highway Administration made that designation earlier this year, in addition to the Door County Coastal Byway, which is in the northeastern side of the state. And so Wisconsin now has three national scenic byways, and these are routes that recognize the high quality natural, cultural, historical, and recreational features. The Lake Superior Scenic Byway runs about 70 miles and begins in an area of small dairy farms in the town of Barksdale. And then that route parallels the Shawamigan Bay shoreline and runs through several cities and towns on the Bayfield Peninsula, as well as the Red Cliff Reservation. And then it wraps around the south shore of Lake Superior through Cornucopia, Herbster, and Port Wing before ending in the town of Cloverland. So you get lots of views of Lake Superior and the Apostle Islands, farmlands, and historic fishing communities.
You know, I bet somewhere along that byway you might be able to view a wolf or two. So I bet also you've got an update on the wolf hunt.
Yeah, and it seems like there are updates every day on this, but, you know, dozens of tribes this week are asking the Biden administration to immediately restore emergency protections for gray wolves. They sent a letter to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, who is the first Native American to lead the agency, and they're basically arguing that states have become too aggressive in hunting the animal. And that letter was signed by tribes across the country, including tribes like the United Nation of Wisconsin. And so this is all taking place after the Biden administration backed a decision by the Trump administration to delist the wolf across most of the nation in January. And since then, states like Idaho and Montana have taken steps to allow hunting of up to 85% and 90% of their wolf populations. in Wisconsin. Hunters killed 218 wolves in the February hunt, during which state licensed hunters blew past their quota. And most recently, the Natural Resources Board approved a quota of 300 wolves for this fall. But the fear is that if it's anything like the February hunt, then the state could lose half or more of its wolf population in just a single year. And that was somewhere around 1,100 wolves prior to the hunt that was held in February.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week on Simply Superior.
I love my Green Bay Packers.
Now that you know all about the Duluth Eskimos, how about them Packers? Join us in our regular time for a special with our sister WPR stations, looking at the Green Bay Packers, their fans, and what makes that relationship unique. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of the Christopher David Hansen Band. Stay safe, everyone.
Life is messy, it's difficult, and it's beautiful. It's hard to figure out how it's both, but we're all here together, for worse or for better. Might as well just make the most. Make the most.